And right now, here's the old Buffalo Chaser, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb. Hello. How are you doing today?
My friend, I'm doing well.
Good, good. Had a great week last week. We married off my daughter, and so 6 out of 6 are married now, and 5 daughters. You know, we have a saying in the Turner family that raising daughters is like raising corn for the other man's pigs. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but that's...
No, but I can imagine your daughters probably didn't care for that analogy.
Well, we've got some pretty good pigs
and
in the family.
And I want to make it explicitly clear that was Dr. Ken Turner, not Zeb
right.
Bell saying that.
Oh, it was good. Had all the kids home, all the grandkids.
I never heard that.
Yep. So.
Oh, anyway. My. You give marriage and daughters and weddings kind of a bad name.
It was good. Okay. We had a great time.
You're trying to cover your tracks.
I am.
Okay, and now without further ado, as he pulls his Tony Lama out of his mouth, what are we going to talk about this
morning? Well, I've got to apologize for last week.
Now you did something last week, too.
We told a story about Peg Leg Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, you know, I don't think anybody has heard of Peg Leg Smith.
Somebody has.
They have, and in fact, every year on the first Saturday in April, and I don't know if I'm going to say this right, at the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, they have a Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest.
Where is that?
It's in Southern Cal, kind of northeast of San Diego, about 100 miles.
He was the guy that stole all the horses, wasn't he?
But they also say that he had a legend about having a lost gold mine. And I hadn't heard about that. So
what you said on the radio got you criticism.
Well, not really, just some constructive information.
In other words, everybody thought a lot of Peg Leg, even though he was a horse thief.
And they have this celebration every April.
You're kidding.
Down there. And I appreciate the listener that let me know about
somebody
this.
Here?
No, I don't know where they're from because they just sent me an email. So they must be from down that
it's
way
probably
somewhere.
Probably a great, great, great nephew
of Peg Leg Smith.
Of Peg Leg.
Anyway, I want to thank that listener for letting me know.
That is nice.
It is. So I appreciate that.
Okay, so you got chewed out on the weddings, and now you got chewed out on Peg Leg. So what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, you know, when you think about freight wagons, a lot of times we talk about wagon trains, you know, with families and one thing or another. This time we're going to talk about a freight wagon train and the difficulties they had.
Well, now, wait a minute. Freight wagon. You also had a story not too long ago where somebody tried to make a freight wagon into a car.
Well,
and sail it.
Yes, the sail wagon.
The sail wagon.
yeah, that was a funny one.
Yeah,
anyway, okay, so here we go. Okay, I want you to picture this. It's a sunny spring day, May 21st, 1853. Long line of freight wagons halted in the Arkansas River Valley near where Hutchinson, Kansas stands today. 57 men made camp and began to prepare their midday meal.
Okay.
And they actually called that dinner. Okay. As they sat down to eat, someone yelled, "Indians."
Mm-hmm.
Everyone looked where he pointed. On the horizon, the men saw about 200 mounted Cheyenne charging toward the wagons.
Oh, this isn't good.
Dinner was temporarily halted.
So was lunch.
The Teamsters quickly moved their wagons into a defensive circle and prepared for the battle. So as the Indians neared the wagons, the Teamsters could hear them yell. Some Indians fired rifles. Others had bow and arrows shot towards the wagons, which, like I say, they were loaded with trading goods bound for Santa Fe. So they were pretty heavily laden.
Yeah.
But anyway, we know what happened that spring day because one of the Teamsters, a young man by the name of James M. Fugit, later wrote his recollections. So this is actually taken from a journal, from a diary.
So this is legit.
Yeah. Okay. And so his name is James, or I'm going to call him Jim Fugit.
Okay.
And here's what he said. He said, "Taken by such a dangerous disadvantage and surprise, we were just in that position which makes men fight with desperation, and instantaneously our rifles were pealing forth with their notes of defiance and death to the Indians."
Boy, that's colorful language.
It is. You know, for somebody back then.
In other words, he could have said, "We were scared to death, but we shot back."
Yeah. So he, anyway, some kind of a colorful, in a good way, language.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the wagon train with 45 men under the command of a J.W. Jones had left Lexington in Lafayette County, Missouri, east of modern-day Kansas City, Missouri, about a month earlier.
Okay.
So they'd been on the trail for about a month.
Mm-hmm.
So their journey was uneventful as the wagon train crossed into what months later would be Kansas Territory and headed down the Santa Fe Trail to Council Grove, which was the last settlement before reaching New Mexico. Well, many miles west of Council Grove, the wagon train came on 12 Santa Fe-bound men with three wagons waiting along the trail. They were just sitting there.
Hmm.
They said they had heard of Indian trouble ahead. So knowing there was safety in numbers, they decided to wait and join the other traders going to Santa Fe. So the dozen men in their three wagons joined the larger train, and everyone headed down the Santa Fe Trail.
I see.
So, and obviously it makes sense. You know, the more wagons, the better protected you're going to be.
Well, yeah.
So anyway, Jim Fugit remembered that as the Indians began circling the wagons, and you've seen this on movies, they swung to the opposite side of their ponies, exposing but little of themselves to our aim by firing under the horses' necks.
Yep.
Now, to me, that's a heck of a horseman.
That can, yeah.
You know, and to hang on like they did. But
the Sioux and the Cheyenne, I think it was the Cheyenne, were the best at that. Or the Comanches, I think, were the best horsemen.
But anyway, their deadly deadly missiles were soon playing havoc among our cattle.
Now, were they shooting guns or arrows?
Both.
Oh, they
Both.
Were.
Yeah.
I see.
So he said the poor creatures were madly surging and bellowing around, endangering us to a death beneath their feet. Worse to be feared within the enclosure than the foe without.
Oh, my goodness.
So this new danger soon drove us outside the enclosure of wagons in full view of the Indians.
Why didn't they get under the wagons?
Well, I don't know. But if you think about it, you've got a small corral with horses and oxen jumping and yelling, so... Oh, anyway, this might be a good time for a break.
Very appropriate. Thank you. And right now I'd like to remind everybody about Minnacashia Sales, 1321 East Main Street in Burley with Zach and the crew. Oh, you're remodeling this spring, are you? Well, listen, they've got all your lumber packages to choose from. Hey, maybe you're fixing the roof. They've got all your shingles, and they've got all your carpet. You're really dressing things up, aren't you? Well, you're pretty doggone smart by going to Minnacashia Sales at 1321 East Main Street in Burley, right across from the airport. And the number to call Zach and the crew, 878-2091. Don't forget, Minnacashia Sales in Burley. And now, the attack continues.
All right, so here we have this wagon train of freight wagons surrounded by Indians.
And they're in a big
shooting
circle.
Back, it's a big circle, the animals on the inside, dust. And
it's a Saturday morning thriller.
It is exciting. So as Jim Fugit and the others moved outside the corral of wagons, the Indians narrowed their circle. So now they're riding within about 25 yards of the wagon.
That's close.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
So the motion
75
of their,
feet.
Yeah. So the motion of their ponies unsteadied their aim until it was kind of random. In other words, the Indians' aim was, you know, you can imagine, I mean, just trying to shoot from a horse, even if you're up on the saddle.
No, I can't imagine shooting from my horse. I wouldn't have a horse underneath me.
At a dead run. So anyway, Fugit and the others found that as the Indians pressed nearer, the Teamsters became more destructive with their shots.
Uh-huh.
They became more accurate.
And what did they shoot at?
Sometimes they shot the horses.
Yeah, you can't blame them.
Right. So, realizing their rifles were not very effective, the Indians quickly turned to using their bow and arrows.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah. So
by shooting under the horse?
Yeah, under their neck.
How did they do that?
Well, let's keep going here, and I think we'll get a hint here.
All right.
And here's where Jim Fugit tells what happened next. He says, finding themselves getting most terribly worsted in the combat, they made a dash to ride down and tomahawk us all in one death struggle.
Holy smokes!
I tell you then, we had no child's play. Outnumbered 4 or 5 to 1 in a hand-to-hand fight to death is a serious thing. We were soon mingling together, but driven against the wagons, we could dodge or parry their blows with a tomahawk, while the rapid flashes in each man's hand, probably a Colt Navy Model 1851 revolver, was not so easily avoided by the Indians.
Yeah.
We made the ground too hot for them, and with yells of baffled rage, they broke and fled, carrying off all their killed and wounded, but 3, which they had to leave. That's how he described it. I mean, that's a, you know, if you can try to imagine that. But
first of all, I can't imagine why you'd want to put yourself in plain sight.
Yeah, Anyway, that's the way they did it. But anyway, Jim and the others looked around to evaluate their situation. One of the Teamsters, a young man named Gilbert, was dead. His revolver had misfired. He had picked up a rifle and was using it as a club against the Indians when he died.
Oh, my goodness sake.
Fugate remembered that Gilbert lay as he fell with his hand clenched around the stock of his gun as though he would take the weapon with his departed spirit to the other world.
This guy really could write.
He did.
Yeah.
Excellent. But many other Teamsters were wounded, too seriously. Now, outside the corral of wagons, dead and dying ponies, which we mentioned, were scattered about on the prairie with the arms of their savage owners about them, while several of our cattle were also dead and dying from wounds made by the missiles aimed for us.
Holy smokes. They lose all the animals to pull the wagons?
Pull the wagons.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty gruesome scene
to
me. Anyway, Fugate and the other uninjured Teamsters spent the afternoon burying Gilbert's body on the spot, taking care of the wounded, and gathering up the spoils of the fight. He said, "We destroyed everything belonging to the Indians that we could not carry away."
Now, the Indians considered themselves beaten then.
Right, at this point.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Now, Fugate remembered. Now, toward dusk, the Teamsters moved their wagons and their wounded about 1 mile away to the bank of the Arkansas River and made camp.
Where they had water.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, after an evening meal, the men, except those on guard, sat around the campfires talking. Fugate wrote that they talked over their chances of reaching New Mexico with their small force.
Mm.
And here's what he said. "The future looked hopeless, indeed. But J.W. Jones, who commanded the outfit, swore he could go to Santa Fe." And he was the leader.
He's the leader.
He's determined.
And it doesn't say how many animals were short on pulling the wagons, does it?
No, but, you know, they had to double up, I'm sure, or something. So here we go. Through the night, they were okay. But by dawn the next morning, the Teamsters were breaking camp, moving toward the trail.
Oh, no.
The slow journey was uneventful until late in the afternoon as they neared a place called Walnut Creek, which is a tributary of the Arkansas River.
Uh-huh.
There they made camp in a horseshoe bend on the west side of the creek. The night was peaceful, but at dawn, as the guards were taking the oxen out of the corral to graze, perhaps as many as 500 Cheyenne appeared.
500.
Some were mounted on ponies. Others were on foot. They wanted to steal the oxen.
No.
I mean, that's one of the main things they wanted
to do. Steal. Indians wanted oxen.
Well, they probably ate them. Just, you know. Hmm. Anyway, and here's what he says. "At the east end, the Indians broke through and came into the corral."
Oh, they were there.
Right there. "But of those who came through, it is a question if any ever returned. They were immediately shot and clubbed with the weapons. I broke my own gun stock over the head of one of the Indians."
Oh, my goodness.
"So the Indians, seeing the fate that had befallen their comrades who went through under the wagons, began a hasty retreat and were quickly followed by the entire pack as fast as they could run." So now we've got 500 Cheyenne on the run.
Wait a minute. How many guys were in this freight train?
I'm thinking they had about 45, and they picked up another dozen, so 50, 60.
Against 500 Cheyennes?
Yeah. So they took refuge in a low range of sand hills along the Arkansas River, which not very far from where they were.
Yeah.
But anyway, and what they would do is they'd come out occasionally during the morning to harass us. And Fugate said
harass.
Yeah, you know, shoot.
And good word. Yeah.
So Fugate said that he and the others followed the Indians toward the sand hills.
Now, this doesn't sound real smart to me.
Okay. "Firing at them, but when the Teamsters got as far as they could go, they retreated to the safety of the corralled wagons."
Yeah, like hurry.
Yes. There, the wagon master, J.W. Jones, counted the bodies of 60 dead Indians inside and outside the corral of wagons.
Holy cow.
Now, at this point, five Teamsters had been killed and several wounded, and a few of them would actually later die from their injuries.
Oh, yeah.
So they were getting hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
So anyway, all was quiet until about mid-morning when the men in the corral saw another party of armed white men, actually, forming a line to the west and moving toward the Indians. Now, Fugate and the others soon learned the armed white men were from another wagon train owned by Majors and Russell out of Missouri.
So they were coming to help the freighters.
Yeah. They were camped about a half mile to the west. Seeing them moving toward the Indians, Fugit and the other teamsters in his train left their corral to join them, and soon all of them were moving together toward the Indians. So it was then that the Indians beat a hasty retreat across the Arkansas River.
They're
still
gone.
Outnumbered.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So Fugit and the teamsters from his train apparently visited with the teamsters from the other train, thanked them for their help. The teamsters then returned to their respective camps, and at Fugit's camp, he and the others, they buried their dead, as I mentioned, that had been killed, a little ways southwest of their camp. So at about 2 o'clock that afternoon, they broke camp and soon joined the Major's and Russell wagon train and continued down the Santa Fe Trail. So now here we are, about 5 or 6 miles down the trail.
Oh, no, not again.
The Teamsters had a brush with more Indians.
Oh, my goodness.
But nothing serious occurred until early the next afternoon. Now they are camped about 200 yards south of a place called Pawnee Rock.
Okay.
I've never heard of that. But the night passed without incident. But the following morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, just as the oxen are being yoked, a band of about 300 Cheyenne suddenly charged the wagons from the north around both sides of Pawnee Rock.
This is a problem.
This is not good.
This is not going to work.
All right.
Good.
It's a good thing we're getting close to the end of
this
trail.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. And here's what he said. He said, leaving our cattle just as they were, some yoked, some partly yoked, we instantly seized our weapons and pitched in vigorously to repulse the assault. The Indians opened a heavy fire from the start. They made strainers of our wagon boxes by perforating them with bullets and arrowheads. The Indians who were mounted fired high, and many hit some of their own men on the other side of the corral.
So in other words, they're riding in a circle.
And they're shooting.
And they're shooting, and some of the bullets, this is kind of a circular firing squad.
Yeah, so you may get hit.
This is not good.
Not for
you. You would think that they would have studied tactics more cautiously.
Exactly. So anyway, after firing this way for a while and finding they could gain
it's got to be
nothing.
Funny, though. The chief is sitting up on a hill on his paint pony going, gee, I wish they'd quit shooting each other.
Yeah. So after a while, finding they couldn't get anywhere, they beat a hasty retreat to the south, taking with them their dead and wounded, who were in nearly all cases tied to their ponies. Now, that's what, as I mentioned, they could ride and shoot underneath their neck.
Yeah.
So evidently, they tied themselves somehow to the horse, which makes more sense. Because as was shown by what they said, the thongs that lay by some of the dead ponies where the riders had cut loose and got away.
I see.
So when the horse got shot, they had to cut the rope, the whatever it was that was holding them on the horse.
I still want to go back to the circular attack and the bullets. Man, you could wipe out your own neighborhood and never know it.
So anyway, in that fight at Pawnee Rock, one teamster was wounded and several oxen were killed. The next morning, the wagon train continued down the trail.
Here we go again.
Well, Fugit remembered that they had to fight Indians every few days.
No kidding.
He said, we had engagements at Pawnee Fork, again near Fort Dodge, again at Cimarron, and a place called Mount Aubrey in what is now Kearney County, Kansas. Anyway, when Fugit and the others reached Mount Aubrey, they found a party of 11 Spaniards who had been attacked by Indians. 10 of them were dead. The 11th was still alive, but had been scalped, and he died a few hours after he was found.
Oh.
So that's what they came across.
Anyway,
the wagon train camped near where the Spaniards had been attacked. The night passed peacefully, but at first light, a band of Kiowa, Apache, and Arapahoes attacked.
They got the whole neighborhood.
They do. So Fugit remembered that they first fired on the guards, and then coming up by slow, cautious movements, they were stealthy and steadily did they advance that almost before we were aware of it, we had 8 men lying dead. All this time, we kept up a vigorous and pointed fire. About 10 o'clock, finding they could not capture our train, they retreated the way they came, leaving their dead. So the wagon train remained in camp for 4 days. They buried the dead, including the 12 Spaniards.
Really?
He said, we had some more fighting now and then until we reached Fort Bent, after which we were out of hostile country, and we reached Santa Fe in safety with what we had left of men and animals. We lost no wagons and carried our cargo entirely through.
Holy
but
mackerel.
Think of the how many guys got killed.
That's terrible.
And this is a freight wagon.
And that's a bona fide report from one of the guys who kept a diary.
His journey, and quite eloquent, I thought, in his writing, which is unusual.
I would imagine at the next council fire at the Indian tribe headquarters, they probably discussed their tactics of shooting in a circle.
Yeah, I would think that would have to come up in conversation.
Excuse me, Chief, the last attack didn't work well.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's just a story that
was a good story. And it was called the what?
Well, it's just called Jim Fugit's Adventures on the Santa Fe Trail.
Santa Fe Trail.
And I suspect he probably has a lot more written about other adventures.
Once they were at Santa Fe, then did they turn around and go back the same way?
Well, you know, the freighters.
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either, but that's what they did.
I'd go back to Kansas via New York.
Go, you know, and have a lot of people with you because, this was 1853, so right in the middle of.
And they didn't have the Winchester repeating rifles then either. They were all single shots.
You know, I think you're right.
I know they were, They had the pistols, but I think they were the cap and ball, and they weren't easy to load either.
He said probably a Colt Navy model 1851.
They kick like a mule.
Oh, yeah. So they're, a six-shooter, I guess.
Yeah, but then you took time to... Boy, I'm impressed that they could fire all those guns.
Percussion revolvers, what he calls it.
Percussion caps, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, so that's the story.
You did it again, Doc.
Fugit,
Outstanding. So I've got to pay some bills, and I salute you, Dr. History, for a very good story. I got to talk to you during the break. Don't run off.
Okay. Well, just real quickly, those that want to hear that story last week, just go to dr-history.com, and you can hear the story about Peg Leg Smith that we mentioned.
Yep. Peg Leg, the horse thief.
Yes.
And everybody likes him.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.